You're listening to Rust Belt Run.
Running is what makes me realize that, like, I'm a human being who is worth something.
That is not a good measurement of my value as a human.
We get between 8 and 10,000 additional comments, and I read every one of them.
So you had to run Sand Run for your first. You become race director and take it out.
it's got to be old guy naked in the locker room.
I get to spend time with my friend Adam. I get to do something with my friend.
Right now, I'm not thinking much beyond what I'm going to be drinking next week at this time.
Coleslaw on a taco is not taco, it's barbecue.
And so we'll be discussing tonight with some occasional swear words from Andrew because he's upset, and that's okay.
I know him as the biggest Kid Rock fan around.
You rap that.
Oh, dear God.
You're listening to Rust Belt Running. I'm Adam Wheeler. You can find me on social media at Wheels Up in CLE. Joined as I always am by Andrew Hettinger. You can find him on social media at Andrew Runs a Lot. If you want to find the podcast on social media, you can find us at Rust Belt Running.
Before we go any further, let's take a quick break to tell you a little bit about what we do with run coaching. Adam, why don't you tell us about it?
It's personalized run coaching. It takes into account the schedule that you have to get your runs in, the goals that you have, as well as the base that you come to us with. You talk to us about what it is you want to be doing, the time that you have to do it, and we come up with a personalized plan that fits your needs, works on you towards your goals, and helps provide a bird's eye view on your training to make sure that you don't plateau, to make sure that you're doing the correct training that's appropriate for you, and to get you showing up on race day confidence that you're going to be ready to hit your race goals.
So to learn more about how we can help you hit your race goals, go to rustbeltrunning.com. There you can find out about our different levels and coaching, find out more about us as runners and coaches, or you can support the show with buying merch, a sweatshirt, a patch that you can iron on to your singlet for that race that you're running soon. Maybe you don't want people knowing that you listen to us, but regardless, support the show. But for now, sit back and enjoy the rest of this episode.
Andrew, you ready to talk about sleep today?
Dude, yeah. It's like my favorite thing to do. And sleep, not talk about it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's my favorite. When you nap, are you I know we're probably going to talk about naps at some point, but I just want to ask, are you like a quick, like lay on the couch, doze off guy? Or are you like a get under the covers in bed and like lay there for 3 hours type of napper?
I would say almost exclusively, it's a very quick, like sort of 15-minute power nap. Every once in a while, especially if it's on days with a very, very, very hard run later in training, it might turn into like an actual, like legit, like 2-hour nap.
Long naps. Going to bed for a second time in the afternoon is my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
On the weekends, I love it. It is awesome. I have contrary opinions about a TV in bed to most people.
We'll talk about that.
We will. But there's nothing I love more than, especially like if it's dreary or cold. Oh my gosh. I'm getting cozy just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, not today. You and I are going to hop off of this and go run 10 miles in the cold.
Yeah. So, but we're going to talk all things sleep. You know, it's one of the things when we do our client intakes or consultations, whatever you want to call them initially.
Yeah.
And, you know, even something we ask our runners each week. And, you know, when we do our follow-ups each month is, you know, we want to talk about sleep because it's such an important part of a training cycle. Is getting an appropriate amount of sleep. I mean, that's where your body is doing most of its recovery and muscle building. And, you know, it's really hard to get out and run when you're tired. That'll really kill your motivation. And you're more tired through training as it is. But if you're not getting enough sleep, I mean, you're just asking for every run to be a slog. And, you know, we have maybe some, you have some science and I got some things that I do, to try to, to try to help out with some proper sleep.
I got science, son.
You
know, so in researching for this specific episode, one of the things that really surprised me, maybe the thing that surprised me, was that most of what we know about sleep and its impact on us, the positive impacts on us, is really only stuff that scientists have been able to discover in the last 20 years or so. And you and I are huge critics of grind culture, the idea that, you know, sleep and recovery is really just, it's you basically finding the easy way out and you got to keep grinding. You and I have been huge critics of that. And when I found out that much of what we know about sleep is only about 20 years old, it helped, I guess, make sense a little bit of why grind culture is so rampant in our society. Because you're really talking about something that goes back 300, 400 years. Don't make fun of the quotes that I have in here, but I found a couple of quotes from the 1700s from famous people, Ben Franklin, talking about how you don't need to worry about sleep. There'll be sleep enough for me when I'm in my grave. And it's easy to throw away a comment like that, but when you realize, like, that is the dominant thought, you know, you can take that all the way to CEOs in the 70s bragging about sleeping only 4 hours a night and hating their lives, but bragging about sleeping only 4 hours a night because, man, I just grind. I work hard. And so you're talking about, I think, a culture that's so firmly rooted that it's really hard for people to break out of that because that's just the mentality. I don't need to sleep. I need to work harder. And you hit the nail on the head. Sleep is so important. It's where all the regeneration is done.
Like, why is it so hard to understand that, like, so babies sleep a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And there is so much cognitive and physical and neurological and physiological growth that is taking place in a small child, which is why they sleep all the freaking time.
Right.
You know, you look at teenagers, you know, when I was going through puberty and I was going through a ridiculous growth spurt freshman year, I went into high school. I was not 5 feet tall like you. And I was.
I made fun of one of my coworkers at a meeting this morning about being short. So I guess that's karma revisiting that back on me. Damn it. This is the preview for this episode now. I can feel it.
You made fun of someone for being short. I marked this clip. And
thank you so much. I'll make sure that Robin sees this.
So, so I went into high school. I was not even 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
I think I was like 4'10" or something. And
yeah.
At the end of freshman year, I was like 5'8". I grew a ridiculous amount that year. I was, my jam was Frosted Rice Krispies. My mom would go to the grocery store and buy a box of Frosted Rice Krispies, and I would eat the entire box in one day. And she would always be like, "Where is this?" But I would also, you know, I would come home and I would lay on the couch and I would take like an hour and a half long nap. And then I would go to bed and at a decent time because I was tired all the time. And I would sleep until noon because my body was going through all these changes and it needed rest because that's when it wanted to make the changes.
Right.
That's why kids wake up with growing pains in the middle of the night. They don't have growing pains in the middle of the day. Like, there's all these things that are so blatantly obvious. Why do we choose to ignore those signs later in life because we want to grind? And some of it's not even grinding, you know? Some of it is just, you see this new Netflix, this Bernie Madoff documentary is on Netflix now. I got to watch all of that in two nights. Like that seems, I got to binge watch The Office for the 700th time. Like there's nothing wrong with binge watching The Office, but it just can't, we're sacrificing one of the most important aspects of our, you know, mental health and, you know, physical growth, where we're sacrificing that for Michael Scott.
I don't have a good answer to that. I don't know if part of it is that you highlighted multiple periods of life where people know that they're actively growing and changing, and do adults just simply not necessarily see them as doing that in the same way once they hit adulthood? You know, you talk about sitting there binge watching The Office. I mean, there are times where I get home from a busy shift at work and I'm sort of physically and mentally drained, and I know the right thing to do is go to bed. and just get some sleep early. But instead, I do sit there and binge watch Curb Your Enthusiasm because part of it, it's mindless and I'm maybe not ready for bed, but I don't really have to actively engage with it. I can just sit there and, you know, take that all in. And, you know, if it's part of that adulthood of like, well, we're not actively growing now in the way we were as babies or as teenagers, I think that brings up what's interesting as far as like how sleep research really got started and how researchers started to cue in on how important sleep was. They started to look at people that had different sleep disorders, who had chronic insomnia, who had sleep apnea, who had something called REM behavior disorder. And we don't need to go into the details of all of that. You can if you want to. But what they started to do was say, well, we have these people that we know don't get regular sleep in the way that they need to. What are the impacts on their health down the road? And what they found were that these people tended to develop neurodegenerative disorders. They tended to have higher risk of cardiovascular disease. They tended to have higher risk of hyperactivity and behavioral disorders and depression and anxiety. And so scientists were able to start looking at, well, there's clearly seems to be some correlation between not getting enough sleep and grave health consequences down the road in other areas of life. And that really started getting the ball rolling on those hypotheses of, well, we don't really have necessarily clear links now in terms of what sleep does, but it does seem like it tends to be something that's needed for restoring the brain, processing, you know, maybe anxious, you know, anxiety-inducing events or depressive events, you know, clearing out toxins in the brain to prevent neurodegenerative disorders, clearing out harmful buildup of plaque in the heart to prevent cardiovascular disease. And as they started going down those rabbit holes, that's what they found. That's where scientists really started to stumble into the maintenance processes that really the whole body experiences while you sleep. And so that's where you start thinking that even though as adults we're not necessarily growing in that same way, we still subject our bodies to just daily stress that the body then needs to essentially process and clear out to get us ready for the next day. And that's one of those reasons why sleep is so important. And then you talk about training. You know, we're a running podcast. Our focus on this is more running based. It's really all the work that we do in our workouts in the gym, on the road, on the track. It's in sleep that our body really goes and does the repair work that makes us stronger. You're not really going to get the full benefits of going out and running your ass off if you then don't give yourself enough sleep to recover from it. Maybe the easiest way to think about it is that, you know, dopers who take, you know, HGH or testosterone, that's essentially what your body's producing when you sleep.
Right.
So, hey, you don't have to go out and dope anymore. Just go get some more sleep.
You know, a good example of a guy who gets enough sleep is LeBron James. You know, there's been a lot of, like LeBron James pays a lot of money for his body. And yes. I remember in all the games I've watched of LeBron James, you see him walk up the court a lot, even if he doesn't have the ball. There, he looks for every little gain he can get.
Yes.
And sometimes that is walking up the court to, you know, preserve 10 seconds of energy that he may need later on in the game. But sleep is one of them as well. Yeah. LeBron sleeps like 10 hours a day. Like he makes sure he gets enough sleep at night and then takes a nap. Now, granted, that's easy for a dude who, well, he works a lot. I mean, that dude puts in time to perfect his craft. But, you know, I guess that is part of his work, though, is sleeping. So in a sense, it's easier for him to maybe manage that. I drive a truck. I can't manage a 2-hour nap every day.
Right.
That would put myself and tons of people on the road at risk for 2 hours. So, you know, that's not maybe practical for everybody, but focusing on maybe that 8 hours a night that, you know, and especially since I drive a truck, that's probably more important that I, you know, focus on trying to get that. So I'm not dozing off at the wheel, but you know, LeBron James has, you know, everybody says like, he might be the only person to defeat Father Time because he still is playing at an elite level at 36 years old. That's so old, Adam. 36.
I hate you so much.
I mean, that's younger than me too. I'm crapping on myself here.
He's only a year younger than me. So I think he's 38 right now.
Oh yeah, he's a year older than me. That's right.
He was a year behind me in high school.
That's right. That's right. He's a year older than me.
Still,
I forgot.
Still, you can knock his age and make fun of me because God, the big 4-0's coming up.
Yeah.
I want to circle back to something you said, talking about, you know, it's important for people on the road that you get enough sleep. You know, the recommended amount is 7 to 9 hours. The average American gets 6.8. And you figure that's the average American. So there are plenty of people getting more, but that also means there are plenty of people getting less. And the impact of getting just 6 hours of sleep in terms of your cognitive ability is the equivalent to having a blood alcohol level of 0.1%. So legally drunk. And so you have people who are essentially cognitively legally drunk out on the roads and in classrooms and in offices.
Yeah.
And the problem is it becomes the norm. I remember from my days teaching, because I certainly wasn't getting the recommended amount of sleep. It just becomes the norm. You get used to operating that way and you don't even realize how much of an impact that it has. But that is the actual impact of it. One of the articles that I read, when the author told her editor about this, the editor said, there's no way that can be true. There's no way this news office could be putting out the work we're putting out, essentially being legally drunk. But in terms of research, the showings in terms of cognition is that you are essentially legally drunk if you don't get enough sleep. And if you do that chronically day after day, you just get used to it.
Right. And I mean, it kind of makes sense because you can kind of get used to operating actually drunk too.
Yeah, you can.
I mean, that is a thing. How does alcohol play into all of this while we're talking about alcohol? I know that my like 2.5 month bender after Columbus, now that we're in 2023, I resolved to drink substantially less than I did the end of 2022.
Even though you made fun of the people in our Eagle Up chat about dry January.
Yes, yes. Hey, we're recording this on a Saturday. We're gonna go run some miles with some of our some of our friends. We're gonna run Eagle Up with, and I said we should go get beers afterwards, and they're all doing dry January, and so yeah, I'm a little salty about that because I want to just go get beers.
I can't.
But I'll settle for Mexican food. Way to throw me off.
How does alcohol
Alcohol, yeah. Like, I know I love going to bed if I've had a beer or two.
Right.
I don't know that I feel it affects me the same way that science would say it does.
That's fair.
But what are your thoughts on having some beers before?
So there's certainly a conception out there that drinking will get you sleepy and get you to bed. And I know that I feel that certainly. I'll come home from work and have a glass of wine and I can feel it start to knock me out. There's some research that shows that there is a problem with it. And I don't know if this more relates to amounts. I know from my perspective, when I've had more to drink, I do feel this. It can get you to bed faster, but it disrupts later REM cycles. And so if you've ever gone to bed, you've had a little bit too much, and then you feel like garbage the next day, it might be because your later REM cycles. And REM cycles are really where the bulk of the benefits that you get out of sleep occur. It'll disrupt those REM cycles and essentially disrupt you from having a full good night of sleep. I don't know enough about this subject to know if there's a tolerance that is built up or what the amount is on that. But I do know that it's one of those things that you kind of have to monitor for yourself. If you find yourself having a couple of glasses of wine before bed and then not feeling restored the next day, something that's probably worth looking at is cutting out the couple of glasses of wine before bed, seeing if it has any impact on you.
I think sleep, a lot like many training modalities, there is science that is very specific that yes, you should, everybody should try to get this amount of sleep.
Right.
But there are things that, you know, there might be some wiggle room on. Cause I hear a lot of the issue with alcohol is that it can dehydrate you and that can cause your body temperature to rise in the middle of the night, or you have to wake up and go to the restroom or get a drink of water that is you know, all alcohol induced and causes you to wake up. Well, I'm a dude who's getting older, so I have to go to the bathroom pretty much every night anyways at this point. Yeah. And no matter what I do. There is some wiggle room on some of these things. I think we should probably get into kind of like, how do we make sure that we're getting enough sleep?
Yeah.
And maybe some of what you and I do to ensure that we're able to carve out this time. And, you know, I bring up, Mark Freeman. I didn't mess up his name this time. I bring up Mark Freeman's book, You Are Not a Rock, a lot. And I talk about the, and I'm going to challenge people to do this is, to understand we all have 24 hours in a day. That mm-hmm. that doesn't change. We have that amount of time. That is not anything you can mess with. What do you want your 24 hours a day to look like? I talk about this ideal time inventory. Now draw this out. This really helped me when I wanted to quit smoking. It was the single biggest piece of the single greatest tool I had in that battle was the ideal time inventory. And sleep is so important to training well and to, I think, just functioning well that you should really try to make sure you're getting enough and getting it well, getting good sleep, not just getting sleep, but getting good sleep. So draw 24 hours. And what do you want those 24 hours to look like? Including work. I mean, none of us want to work, but
you have to.
But you have to. Like, that is in there because it needs to be. Even accounting for meals and all of this stuff, training, all of it. And how do you get that in there? Does binge watching The Office for the 700th time, does that fit into that ideal time inventory? Because maybe it is just, I'm going to put on one episode in bed. I'm going to go to, whoop, I just knocked my mic. I get real, real animated when I'm talking about certain points and I just hit my mic with my hands. Maybe for me, I know they say no screens in bed.
Yeah.
It helped. Like you talked about coming home and throwing on a TV show to kind of help you unwind.
Yeah.
For me, I will do that in bed.
Yeah.
I make sure to set a sleep timer on my TV. Mm-hmm. 'Cause yes, if that light is on overnight, that will mess with your sleep. But if something helps you fall asleep, there's nothing wrong with using it. And I think the same thing about TV. Like if you need to lay in bed and watch one episode of The Office, set a sleep timer for half an hour, 45 minutes, go for it.
Yeah.
Like that helps me out. And now I can, you know, watch my show and focus on getting the proper amount of sleep. I'm usually asleep like halfway into an episode of Seinfeld. That's what I'm throwing on at night right now is Seinfeld. But like that helps me shut my brain off. That helps me get into that space. Do you keep your phone next to you or do you remove it from your room? I know that this is one of those tips everybody says, but
yeah. So no, I don't keep it in my room. I keep it in my kitchen. I have an alarm set in my bedroom for when I need to get up. And part of the benefit of it is that it forces me to get up out of bed. Cause for me, it's the process of getting up and getting moving. And once I've done that, cause I'm not a morning person. I am not that person that wakes up and is like gung ho, raring to go. Like I'm a night person.
Does it work when you have to go watch your friends run races?
Listen, that was one time I did drink too much the night before.
Fair. And yeah, see what happened?
Yeah. That's why I don't do that anymore. So no, I don't. And, you know, so there's two things I want to hit on here that you talked about. One regarding the ideal time inventory, because you bring that up a lot. You've brought it up in regards to how it helped you quit smoking. I think one of the things you have to do with the ideal time inventory is you have to not just look at what you want to be doing, but you have to be honestly blunt and brutally honest with yourself about what you are doing now
Yeah.
And recognize that there are things that you like that might be keeping you from things that you love, and understanding the importance of that. You know, I can like coming home and sitting down and watching an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I can really like watching three episodes of it, but getting to bed an hour and 15 minutes later than I wanted to, and that keep me then from having the sort of training that I want to be doing the next day. And so it's part of, you know, making difficult decisions is sometimes, especially if you're looking to train at a high level, if running is important to you, you have to be brutally honest sometimes about when those moments of really intense training come about where it's like, no, I have to prioritize my sleep, because if not, it's going to affect my training. So it's a tool, but it's a tool that requires you to be honest, and requires you to be honest about giving up things that you might like doing to pursue things that you really love doing. You know, and then two, asking about screens, you know, that advice about like not having a TV in the bedroom. You know, one of the thoughts about building good habits in general is just that you want to, it's called priming your environment. Basically looking at your environment and having it be used for only specific things. So like one of the tips about not using social media is that, you know, if you've got a place where you want to get work done, you don't want to be using social media at that spot. Because then you'll start to associate that spot with not just doing work, but with also wasting time on social media. And all of a sudden, it's very easy to go from doing the thing you want to do to the thing you don't want to do. And so the thought process around like not having screens near the bed, not having a TV in the bedroom is that, well, you know, if binge watching a show for 3 hours in your bed is what you start to associate with being in that bed, then maybe you're not looking at your bed and thinking, this is where I go to sleep. And so if you're having difficulty getting to sleep, that might be something that you look at doing to try to focus, or to try to basically narrow down what the role of your bed is. In peak performance, Brad Stahlberg and Steve Magnus say associate the bed with sleep and sex, and that's it. But again, there's wiggle room, and you know, you sound like you have a pretty good system in terms of like you'll sit there and use it to help you wind down, but it isn't like you're doing it for 2 hours. Got an episode on, you're tired, you're going to bed. So that's where the advice comes from, and that's the thought process behind it. As you noted, there's a lot of gray area around it.
Well, and it all does take a discipline. Like my alarm clock is my phone. Okay. So my phone is with me.
Yeah.
But it's also on do not disturb. I don't need to, because I don't need to attend to vibrations at, you know, I mean, I wake up at 5:30. I'm in bed earlier than many people are.
Yeah.
You know, even during my post Columbus bender, I was, you know, I still go to bed by 10.
Right.
You know, and so there's, at that time, there's still a lot happening. There's still messages. Will Mercer is still sharing me stupid posts on Instagram. Like, I mean,
yes,
it's still a thing that happens, but I don't need to attend to it then. Like, that's not the time to do that. So, you know, utilizing that do not disturb feature is, you know, on my watch and my phone, is very, useful. You know, using the sleep timer function on my TV so that if I don't turn it off, you know, it doesn't stay on all night to wake me up and mess with my sleep in the middle of the night. I also, you know, I associate my bed with sleep because it's just cozy as crap. Like I have, these are both unpaid testimonials. We unfortunately do not make much money and we do not get money from either one of these companies. But, you know, we did invest in a nice mattress last summer. And we got fancy and we got a Sleep Number bed. And, I'm a very, very hot sleeper. I get ridiculously hot. And my wife is a very cold sleeper. So I keep our room like a meat locker. And that disrupts her sleep because now she's too cold. And I'm still too hot. So, you know, we got a mattress that we thought would help with that, and it didn't. So I had to get but it's really comfortable. It's better than the hand-me-down mattresses we always had through our whole marriage. And, you know, we now have our own, and it's awesome and comfortable. And I can, you know, I really enjoy just laying in it because it's that freaking comfortable. I don't feel like I toss and turn at night either. So I think investing in a good mattress, it doesn't have to be a Sleep Number, but investing in a good mattress is something that should be done. I mean, it's, you know, there's the whole, you spend a third of your life in bed. It's freaking true. And it's really important. And if that third of your life is spent in a more productive state of sleep, then the other two thirds of your life are going to be even better. So it's like, I think it's a very worthy investment. And so I, you know, being a hot sleeper, I invested in a chilly sleep as well, which is one of those cooling pads that you can put on your bed. And it like cools down water and puts water through this pad or however the hell it works. I don't know, but it's amazing because I'm actually like, I don't sweat in the middle of the night anymore, which is awesome and way less disgusting than how, oh, you should have seen our old mattress topper. Oh my God. It was bad. But, that's also gross that my wife and I left it there as long as we did. But neither here nor there, totally beside the point, you know, that's in the past and you're laughing at me, but you know, it's like, I think making investments and things like that, that are tools that are available now that, you know, we do have a lot more research on sleep. And I think a lot more people do take it seriously. There are tools out there that are able to help you get a better night's sleep. And I would put that in like a good tech category of sleep. Yes. I think when you look at a lot of sleep trackers and stuff, I think that's bad tech because it has you focusing on metrics like you would running, which can give you an idea of how your sleep is or isn't. But what actions are you making to improve it? Yeah. And if the action is just, I want to know what it is, and oh crap, I didn't spend enough time in my REM cycle last night, what are you doing to fix it?
Right.
Are you doing anything controllable to fix that? And if you're not, you're just going to stress out about it. And that's going to lead to worse sleep. And I think that's something that we've all heard on podcasts 5 million times, especially if you listen to Steve and Brad at The Growth Equation. I mean, they talk about it repeatedly is, you know, you just end up having sleep anxiety if you're stressed so much about the data. But I think there are tools out there that can allow you, if you go, I struggle with sleep because I'm sweating too much, there's something there, or the opposite, you know, I think there's so much out there, that can allow you to get better sleep that doesn't have to be, you know, just melatonin all the time.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up melatonin. One is that any discussion about melatonin is well beyond the scope of this podcast. And it's just, I don't know enough about it to really talk about sleep supplements. What I do know is that sleep supplements are used as a crutch to avoid dealing with the other stuff. You can take melatonin, but if you are going to be up on your screen, scrolling through things, scrolling through news, which is going to induce anxiety, and has you exposed to blue light, which can disrupt circadian rhythms, doing all those things right up until bed, it's probably not going to matter how much melatonin you take because you're not really doing the other things that you need to do to try to ensure better sleep. You know, so if you're going to be drinking caffeine until 8 o'clock at night with the goal of going to bed at 11 o'clock, melatonin's not going to help offset that. So you've got to be smarter about how you really look about establishing a sleep routine and start there. And then see what impact it has on your sleep. And then if you're still having issues, maybe talking to a doctor about like, well, is a supplement right for me? Maybe I need to sort of reset my melatonin cycle. I know Brad and Steve actually did an episode on sleep. And you know, I think Brad talked about how he was having like a 2-week issue with insomnia. And I think his brother's a doctor. And his brother said, well, like take a very low dose of melatonin for 2 weeks and just see if it helps reset that cycle. And it did. But again, that was his brother, a doctor, giving that information. So that's outside the scope of us. But you know, but what we can say is just you've got to look at those things that you want to that are easily achieved, that you can do to help set up a good sleep routine, like limiting caffeine intake within 5 to 6 hours before sleep, trying to go to bed at roughly the same time of night, staying off of devices that emit blue light until closer, you know, a little bit further away from bedtime so that you basically prime your body to just enter its normal circadian rhythm.
So it's, you say it's outside the scope of this podcast, but with melatonin so readily available, I don't think it is outside the scope of this podcast to say, don't just turn to that. I'm not going to, you know, we're not going to talk about it with our athletes or anything. We can't, you know, prescribe it. But what I would prescribe is look at every other thing you can do before you turn to Walgreens, where they have like three shelves that are just melatonin sleep aids now. Like it's that readily available, and it's marketed as so harmless when, while maybe it is in a sense, it's not leading to better sleep for a lot of people.
I think it's misunderstood.
Yes. And it's not regulated well. So it can be marketed as kind of a miracle. And I think that's, you know, maybe where it is within our scope to step in and say, don't just turn to that because you don't feel you're falling asleep well. There's so many other things you can diagnose that are going to be far healthier for you before you turn to that. And just discuss that with like a doctor or get a sleep test done. Like there's where we're kind of running out of time here, but you know, there's so many other things that can lead to inappropriate sleep that should be addressed before we just start throwing melatonin at everything.
Right.
And I mean, they have freaking melatonin for kids. You can just go buy now. So parents can just, you know, I'm not like holistic. Oh, my kid only, the crap my kid eats is, that kid eats more chicken nuggets than I care to admit. So I'm not like some natural only, like don't drug your kids. I mean, he's got every vaccine and then some that he can get. So we're not that at all, but that's not something I'm just going to turn. I just want my kid to go to sleep, and he drives me nuts at bedtime. I would love nothing more for him to just go to bed and never come downstairs until he wakes up the next morning. It's not what happens. The kid's awake for like an hour and a half after bedtime. But I'm not going to throw melatonin at it. That can't be the response. So I think we just, there are so many of those miracles we have in medicine and supplements today that, you know, we need to not stay away from, but we need to approach as if they aren't so readily available.
Yeah, they can't be the first line of defense. They have to be something that comes later in the process, because there's a lot you and I and our listeners control or can control that they really should start with before they really look there. You know, there's a couple things I want to bring up about naps before we start to wind down. Because you asked me at the beginning, you know, what kind of a napper I am and how I nap.
If you dog on my naps at all, we're done. This podcast
is over. Listen, as somebody who loves getting about a 15-minute power nap in the middle of the day, I'm not going to dog on naps at all. One is that if you feel naturally groggy during the middle of the afternoon, that's actually part of your body's normal circadian rhythm, and it's totally fine. And NASA actually did it. Yeah, sure.
Sorry. I just want to interrupt. Circadian rhythm. A lot of people don't know what circadian rhythm is.
Sure.
It's just your body's natural, like, sleepiness cycle, basically.
Yes.
It's when it's telling you to go to bed. So if you're not familiar with that term, sorry.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, it's just normally regulated through hormones, and it's what basically makes you feel sleepy at the end of the day. And people do tend to feel groggy in the middle of the afternoon, and that's a normal part of your circadian rhythm. And naps are perfectly appropriate there. NASA actually did a study looking at like what made people more responsive when they got a little sleepy in the middle of the day. And they found that naps were better than caffeine for doing it. So you have NASA scientists telling you that you should be taking a nap in the afternoon if you can make that happen.
So if I can now, if I can take a nap in the middle of the afternoon and then have a cup of coffee after, but it's before, but like not within 5 to 6 hours of when I go to bed, that's like next level then, right?
That's next level stuff.
Yes. Let's go.
And as long as if it's not interfering with your sleep at the end of the day, why not go for it? But there is a thing that needs to be pointed out regarding napping. And this is specifically if you're using naps to replace getting less sleep at night, like instead of getting the recommended 7 to 9, you're getting 5 to 6, and then saying, well, I'll make it up with an hour nap in the middle of the afternoon. It might help with overall energy levels, but in terms of those benefits that you get from deep sleep at nights, the stuff that happens with REM cycles, the maintenance phases that your brain and your heart go through, the regeneration of muscles and bone, that will not get replaced by having a nap in the middle of the day if you're getting less than the recommended amount of sleep. So yeah, that's something to keep in mind, especially, again, if you're training hard and looking to do big things in races.
Naps will add to good sleep patterns, but they will not replace good sleep patterns.
Nope.
That's the – okay. Yeah, see, I can get on board with that because, I don't – you know, I don't use them to augment sleep. I use them to – or I guess I do use –
okay, use them to augment. You don't use it to replace.
Yes, yes. I was like, I did not use that word appropriately. So yeah, this is good stuff. I think I think we covered a lot of good stuff here. And again, it's something we discuss a lot with our athletes, and you know, a lot of it is just making that concerted effort to get enough. And I know as a parent, it can be really hard. I mean, I've brought it up on the podcast before, but it can be really difficult when your kid goes to sleep to be like, I'm just going to go to bed right when they do, because you want your quiet time. You want your quiet time. But I just try to, you know, especially once training hits and I get into the throes of that, it, you know, like things adjust and there's a season for everything. I mean, that's probably the most common phrase on this podcast. You know, I don't probably go to bed till 10:30 and get only, you know, 7 hours of sleep a lot when I'm not training. But when I'm training, I mean, I'm trying to get 8 to 9. I mean, I wake up at 5:30 for work. I want to be in bed by 8:30, knowing I'm not going to fall asleep right away. And I hopefully can be asleep by 9. That's kind of just the focus that I want to put on it, because I understand the importance of it. You know, it's part of that ideal time inventory where this is what I want my 24 hours of my day to look like. It has to include 8 to 9 hours of sleep. And, you know, hopefully that is something, again, buy that book. It's useful in, he has so many useful tools, that can be applied in so many different directions in life. But that ideal time inventory is part of it. So,
Yeah,
but I'm good. You good? I'm ready to take a nap now.
Got some time before we got to head down to Akron.
Now I
got
to eat. So, yeah. Well, I hope you guys get some good rest, and it's time to focus on that. That's let your body recover when it recovers best. And I dig that. All right. But until then, Adam, I will see you soon. And everybody else, thanks for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, review us on your favorite podcast platforms. And until we see you again, enjoy those miles, everybody.